Good evening, and welcome to the next episode of FieroCast. Tonight, we are going to look at the history of the Fiero in racing. And just to give a heads up, this is a two-part FieroCast, with tonight we're talking part one. But before we jump into Fiero racing, did you know that FieroCast has been awarded three awards since 2023? Winner. The Best Automotive Award FieroCast for Best Iconic American Car Brand Enthusiast Club 2023. Winner, Best Global Business Award for Best Automotive Podcast 2024, as well as the Media Innovator Award for Most Informative Automotive Podcast for 2024. FieroCast is a production of the Northern Illinois Fiero Enthusiasts, which is an incorporated business in the state of Illinois. With almost 50 episodes and more are coming, FieroCast has been a project that started back in 2020 for the Fiero community. So thank you to the Fiero community and our sponsors for your support and listening to FieroCast for almost 5 years. It has been a pleasure producing each and every episode for you. I am your host, Mike Croyer, and you are listening to the newest episode of FieroCast, the only podcast dedicated to the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. You can find past FieroCast episodes at FieroFocus.com or on our Facebook page and our YouTube page. We'd like to thank our FieroCast support sponsors for this final 2024 episode. The Fiero Store, Rodney Dickman, Bonterre Solutions, the Midwest Fiero Clubs, GoldenEye Graphic, the NIFE Store, and the Northern Illinois Fiero Enthusiast, as well as Automodella and A1 Auto Transport. This episode tonight is brought to you by the Midwest Fiero Clubs and the Enthusiast Guide to the Pontiac Fiero.
Have you asked yourself, what is the Midwest Fiero Clubs? Well, the Midwest Fiero Clubs, which is also a region of the AACA, is a dedicated group of enthusiasts whose passion is to promote and preserve the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. The Midwest Fiero Clubs consists of members from existing Fiero Clubs across the U.S. The Midwest Fiero Club's intent is to support member clubs and promote the Fiero-related events that they offer. The intent is to enable enthusiasts to discover events in their areas other than their own, and to warrant participation. This has created a tighter-knit Fiero community of the owners, and created some great regional shows that may not have otherwise happened. So, how do I find out about them? You can visit the website at midwestfieroclubs.aaca.com, or just Facebook them at Midwest Fiero Clubs AACA and like them. Are you looking for that perfect gift for that Fiero hobbyist? Check out version 4.0, the Enthusiast Guide to the Pontiac Fiero. What is the Enthusiast Guide? Well, in this version 4.0 of the EG is the most in-depth, comprehensive, documented information on the stock 1984 to 1988 Fiero, with over 50 pages in an 8.5 by 11 spiral-bound book. This is the most up-to-date on Fiero facts, statistics, numbers built, the colors, VIN decoder, and specifications, with over 150 full color images. There is no more books or no other information out there that has this much in there for the Fiero hobbyists. There's more information included in the guide than any other publication on the market. The new version includes 18 new bullet point topics throughout the guide, two new sections added covering the notchback and fastback luggage carriers, and a full listing of over 75 factory label descriptions and locations, including over 70 new images added. So this has been in publication since 2005, and it's now 2021 with just about 2,000 copies purchased to date. You can order it online at fearofocus.com. Just head over to the store and click on the Fear Enthusiast Guide, or you can go to the Fear Enthusiast Guide page at fearofocus.com, print out the order form, and send it in to Mark Soldner, and he'll get your copy out to you.
All right, let's get started with part one of the history of Fiero racing. So over time, many of us have considered the performance potential of the Fiero's drivetrain and the suspension layout. Often, this is a major factor for the draw of the car. But we ask, how much performance can we extract from a mid-engine layout and the huge engineering flexibility of our cars? However, with this awesome potential, it is easy to forget about the roots of the car. Let's face it, the Fiero was designed and presented to the GM brass as a commuter car. Heck, it even hurts me a little to say words commuter car, but that was the original design intent. When the P car was designed in the late 1970s, it had been hard on gas-guzzling vehicles, and there was a market identified for a two-seat commuter car. So, let's fast forward a few years to 1983. Gas prices were reasonable. People had been craving a performance car for at least 10 years now. But due to the previous high gas prices and the technical challenge of now required emissions, both HP robbing and weight adding, few cars existed to meet this need. So now Pontiac, they announced that they will release a new 1984 two-seater model in fall that will not be a performance car. What? Why? Pontiac, the performance division of GM, is building a two-seat mid-engine commuter car? Even before the Fiero was released to the public, Pontiac identified that it needed a project to have a performance image for a car. John Callies, the then manager of Pontiac Motorsports, was tasked with this challenge. And so the stage was set for the beginning of all Fiero race programs. Now, before we continue, I think it's important to get a good understanding of all types of racing in which the Fiero was involved in. When most of us think of Fiero racing, we think of the IMSA, which is the International Motorsports Association Fiero. This is a name given to the road racers that compete in the Camel GT series from the spring of 1984 and into the 1988 season. This is not to be confused with the street version of the car. The street version is often called an IMSA Fiero, but is in fact a diversified glass product, which is a DGP bodied Fiero that is intended to copy similar body features, and in some cases, similar engine components, as the true Pontiac-designed IMSA tube chassis, the purpose-built competition IMSA car. So, I'm going to summarize a little bit of the many types of racing in which the Fiero or SD4 engine was involved. As we know, the International Motorsports Association, which is IMSA, so is part of the IMSA GTU, which is the Grand Touring class, at or under a 3.0-liter engine displacement. Then you got the IMSA GTO, which is the Grand Touring class for over 3.0-liter engine displacement. You got IMSA GTPL, which is the Grand Touring prototype lights class at or under 3.0 liter. Then we kind of shift a little bit, and we go into the Sports Car Club of America, which is the SCCA, and they have a Trans Am at or under 3.0 liter engine displacement. You have the SCCA Solo 1, the Solo 2, you have the Pro Solo, and the Pro Rally. Then you get into a little bit more of, well, the drag racing part, which is the National Hot Rod Association, the NHRA. They have your Competition Eliminator. You have your Super Gas, which is the SD4. You have the Super Competition. And then on top of that, if you want to get into the boat end, you have the American Power Boat Association, which is the APBA, and those are the inboard class. So as seen from the list I just gave you, the Fiero qualifies for many types of racing. But in this article, in this FieroCast, the article was again written prior to the FieroCast, but we'll focus on the road racing end, which covers the IMSA GT and the SCCA Trans Am Series classes. So, in order to promote sales of the car, the focus of the Pontiac Motorsports needed to be one that the general public could identify with. From the perspective of your average Joe, the car seems low and nimble. Because of the obvious connection, GM decided to pursue road racing as its primary focus. At the time, the highest level of this type of racing was the IMSA GT series. Although not as popular, the SCCA Trans Am series was also available. Before competing in any form of the auto racing, it was very important to decide on the exact class and to consider the governing rules. This will provide direction for the car chassis and the engine design. Often competing in classes that resemble production cars, rules state that the car must retain product identity, and in many cases have similar drivetrain layout and chassis geometry to that of the popular production car. Taking these guidelines into consideration now, this put the Fiero into the IMSA GTU class. Now, it was time for John Callies and the Pontiac Motorsports team to jump in and put together an engine and chassis combination. So, in September of 1982, 1 year before the official production car launch, Callies started with the factory four-cylinder, but quickly realized that it needed a major redesign to be competitive. After completing a few newly designed blocks, cranks, and heads, they started development of the engine. Constructing the new pieces took approximately 6 months or so. But oddly enough, the first Super Duty four-cylinder, the SD4, as it would later be called, started life in an oval track NASCAR dash circuit running in a Sunbird sometime around the spring of 1983. Now, Tim Peterson, who designed the original cast iron head for the SD4, but for the engine testing and development needed to continue the program, Paul Venderli of Venderli Engineering was brought into the project. Although Venderli had a wealth of experience in many areas, dirt oval and drag racing, to name a couple, his ability to visualize airflow through the engine heads was the contribution that set him apart from other engine builders. Now, because of the special talent and combined experience of the team, the total performance of the SD4 engine was now being realized. Surprisingly, during the 1983 season, when while still under development, the motor won the NASCAR Dash Series with Richard Mash at the wheel. Now, at this point of development, the engine had a 2.7-liter displacement and produced approximately 275 horsepower at 7,500 RPMs. As it was now becoming clear in the spring of 1983 that the SD4 was now getting some legs and the remainder of the car needed to be designed to meet the IMSA and SCCA requirements. So during the summer of 1983, work began on the chassis and the drivetrain designs. Webster Gear was an instrumental part in helping with the development of the transmission. Now, back at Pontiac, Terry Setchell, a production car chassis designer, was heading up the internal tube chassis and suspension design using a sophisticated CAD-CAM system. This was Setchell's first chassis design. He later would be designing many different chassis and eventually work for Roush Racing. Now, in comes John Chinello, who was hard at work designing the functional and beautiful bodywork for this beast. Okay. Paul Vanderlei created the SD4 heads that had the flow needed to produce good horsepower. But meanwhile, Callies was running around the country getting vendors on board. Due to a very small budget, Callies would often negotiate for a company to make the number of parts needed, and in exchange, the supplier would own the tooling and the rights to make that part and sell it later. So besides being able to sell OEM parts through GM, the supplier also now gained the advantage of the Pontiac division and design development. Due to Callies' efforts, this plan worked well, and he brought many strong companies on board to the Pontiac Fiero division. Many of the parts would later be offered through Pontiac dealerships. And in sense, the motorsports, Pontiac Motorsports, was not only developing a factory-backed race car, but was also making factory-designed race kit car for others to build at home. So several suppliers were well-known and brought extensive experience to the team, which, you know, some of these included the engine, which was Vanderlei Engineering and Hoffacher Engineering. The suspension was under Hoffacher Engineering. The body was under Diversified Glass Products, or DGP. The transmission was Webster Gear. The uprights were from Superbell Axle Company. The brakes came from Stock Car Products. The fuel cell was Dan Allen Fuel Cells. The wheels came from Centerline, as many of you have heard that name many times over in the last couple of years. The fuel system was from Russell Performance Products. Radiators were from Modine, and the rack and pinions were from Sweet Manufacturing. So during engine development, Callies used a vast number of resources to get gears fabricated and produced. For example, John Deere, best known for tractors, actually cast the first SD4 engine block because they had the best alloy and block production facility around. For the block machining, Callies called on Al Fasica, and Al really helped get things done for not only the initial machining, but also for many machining items throughout the racing program. This was possible because Al knew virtually everyone within Pontiac who could get products accomplished without the red tape. So for the first SD4 block machining, Al was able to get a crew to volunteer to keep it on Saturdays. You know, change over tooling on the production engine line for Plant 55, machine 600 engine blocks, and then change all of the tooling back for regular production by Monday. So in 2 days, they were able to produce 600 engine blocks. So and while in development, Hoffacher Engineering was also brought on board for their racing, their chassis, and fabrication experience. Ultimately, they would be the primary source for a customer to produce a partial or turnkey race car package. Also, through development with Pontiac, they would be able to source the blueprints for people to build their own race car at home. So, in talking with Joe Hoffacher many years ago, he remembered building 18 IMSA Fieros in total. Of those cars, 15 were Fiero-bodied race cars, while the remaining were Ferrari-bodied cars. He also believes that they sold half, maybe again, about 27 in total, as many just blueprints. Many of these Hofficker engineering-built race cars still exist and are racing to this day. So, to paint a picture, Pontiac Motorsports was a small group run by John Calles out in the desert at the Mesa, Arizona Proving Grounds. The team consisted again of John Calles, the engineer John Erickson, who would later take over for Calles in 1988. Two other engineers, a draftsman, and a secretary. This worked well because Calles and his team were not under the constant observation and restrictions they would have been subject to at the GM headquarters. There were several key players back in Michigan that moved, mountains and pushed through paperwork to give Calles the freedom and the tools needed to make this happen. This is where people like Al Flasica, Tim Peterson, and John Zerner came in. Zerner was hired by Bob Dorn to be the assistant chief engineer and Calles' supervisor. Given all the tasks on Dorn's desk, having Zerner would allow Calles to get more attention and help as needed. It also helped that Zerner was a big car nut, and it turned out a drag racing fan too. So he had suggested that Calles take the Fiero into the drag racing world. And as luck would have it, Zerner's old college buddy had a company called the Rod Shop. This would later enter the Fiero into the NHRA Competition Eliminator classification. However, this is a story for another time. So we'll get into that later. Let's get back to the racing end of it. All right. So the short time in which this racing program was developed is amazing. The IMSA Fiero was designed and suppliers kicked off, tooling made, parts fabricated, and a chassis with a newly developed SD4 had been built, all within 6 months. Even as the SD4 Sunbird was still finishing up engine development, a fully functional prototype for the IMSA road race car had begun testing in October of 1983. In November, the car was scheduled to run at open testing in Daytona with the test driver Clay Young. It became obvious that the suspension needed help. The car was very unstable, not only in the curves, but also during braking due to suspension geometry. Now, this is where Clay's experience came in, and he suggested that he take the car to one of his trusted friends, E.J. Trivett of Beard and Trivett. Trivett had 13 years of experience with not only suspension design and development, but also many years of racing experience, including over 10 years of being a NASCAR driver. Trivett discovered the geometry problems causing the car's instability and altered many of the mount points in which the way that the dynamic geometry of the suspension was surfooted and for nearly all conditions. So after Trivett had made the corrections, the car was entered back into the 24 Hours of Daytona in February of 1984. Now, the famous 24 Hours of Daytona was the Fiero's first race appearance. Pontiac Motorsports had decided to go at this full throttle. Now, typically, there are many more months of testing done before sending a newly designed race car to any race. But Calles thought the best way to accelerate the program was by trial by fire. Therefore, his aggressive plan put the Fiero in the toughest race right away, a 24-hour endurance run. Now, the drivers for this challenge included Clay Young, Douglas Granat, and Jim Burt. As it turned out, the car completed only 2.5 hours and had to retire due to a camshaft gear failure. This was the first of many engine failures to plague the SD4. These failures were not too surprising considering the difficulty and of the difficult internal harmonics of the inline four-cylinder engine. So Callie spent many red-eye flights bringing a bag of broken parts back to their home base, GM's Arizona Proving Grounds. And in the summer months, as the summer months went by, many more bags of parts made their way back to Mesa, Arizona for redesign and development. More than 40 internal engine parts were redesigned mainly due to the second order harmonics in the motor. It was not until the race of Michigan's International Speedway, MIS, on September 15th, 1984, that the IMSA Fiero finally won for the first time. Clay Young was at the wheel, and more importantly, it was the first win for any American car in the series, and it was in front of the big GM brass at the home track near Detroit. Amazingly, the IMSA Fiero turned around and won the very next race at Watkins Glen. Yes, the Fiero had finally proven itself as a true race car due to the huge efforts by John Callys and the Pontiac Motorsports division. At this point, a congratulations were in order, but the team was not done yet. In fact, they had just gotten started. That concludes part one of the history of Fiero Racing. I'd like to thank you for listening tonight as we looked at part one of Fiero Racing. This podcast was written by NIFE member Paul Hostler, produced by GoldenEye Graphic, published through FieroFocus.com, and is a production of the Northern Illinois Fiero Enthusiasts. Thank you again for joining me tonight. I am your host, Mike Cryer, and thank you for listening to the award-winning and newest episode of FieroCast. This is episode 49 and is the only podcast dedicated to the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. If you like more information or have any ideas of future FieroCast, you can email me at mkroyer@fierofocus.com. Remember to keep Fieroing, and good night, Fiero owners, wherever you are. Resources for tonight's episode of FieroCast: Fiero, Gary Witzenberg, 1990 edition, Motorbooks International, FieroSportsCars.com, 2000 SCCA National Solo Rules Book, Pennant Fiero Forum, Google search for the other Fiero winners, Paul Hostler, previous acknowledged gathered from personal discussions from John Callys, Terry Sheffield, Joe Hoffer, Paul Vanderlei, T.J. Trivett, and David Pearson. Special thanks to John Callys, former manager of Pontiac Motorsports. John reviewed this article and provided additional insight and information.